Clubhouse.
There is a lot of content in the world. Each year, we're inundated with thousands of hours of television, hundreds of new movies, and music every week. It can be overwhelming. How do you know what's worth your time and what you should just skip? Well, luckily, Pod Clubhouse is here to help.
Hello, and welcome to the Unsolved Mysteries Love It or Leave It podcast from Pod Clubhouse. This is Sheila, and today with me, I have back at Pod Clubhouse, I have Brandy and Sunny from the Book of Lies podcast. Hey, ladies.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi. How is it going?
Pretty good.
Hot, but yeah. Pretty good. Yeah, it's going. It's hot. Yeah. So I live in the Northeast. I live in New York, so I don't have central air. So So currently I'm in a pre-cooled room. I've gotten smart about these now. I pre-cool my room for like 2 hours, and then the sweat clock starts.
Oh boy.
But this is better because it's earlier in the day, so the sun is not directly beating into the room that I'm in. So this is pretty good. So
that's good.
So I have to say, I listened recently to your Milli Vanilli podcast, and first of all, I'm in love because I think that we're all kind of around the same age group, age wheelhouse. So you were railing against some of the younger millennials who won't know who Milli Vanilli is.
Yeah.
But I have to say, for a couple of days, I've had Girl, You Know It's True stuck in my head.
Oh my gosh, that was my mission for the episode, for everyone to sing the song, because I was singing it.
Mission accomplished. I mean, like, it was like the running theme throughout the show. It was like, Girl, You Know It's True. And you guys were feeling it. And you know what, I think the part I appreciated most was when you said that, you know, like, they became like the butt of all jokes. And when you said In Living Color, I was like, yes, I'm here for this. I am here for this.
They were. Like, those skits were amazing. Like, Living Color was amazing. Getting to relive Milli Vanilli was awesome. And just, you know, their story was, I'm glad that I did the research, because I was like, wow, I didn't know all of this was going on. So it's a good episode. Thanks for listening.
Oh my God. No, thank you. Because, you know, it brings back a simpler time in our lives. we're living in, you know, very, very dark times now compared to, you know, Milli Vanilli's track skipping.
Seriously.
You know, and then it was funny because, you know, fast forward, you know, into the 2000s, when a couple of years ago on New Year's Eve, Mariah Carey's tape failed, right?
Yes.
At the New Year's Eve atop Times Square, you know, we watched that and we're like, oh. Mm-hmm. But again, yeah. Those are her pipes, which is the point that you guys made very, very appropriately, that it was her pipes that were the backing tracks, not, you know.
Someone else's. Exactly.
Absolutely. So in keeping with that whole theme, we're here to talk about some unsolved mysteries. So Netflix has rebooted the old show. I believe it used to air on, I think it was NBC, back in the day. Now, did you guys watch the original with Robert Stack?
Yes. And actually, it comes on in reruns like early in the morning on, I want to say it's TBS. I don't think it's TBS, but it comes on around 6 o'clock in the morning with Dennis Farina hosting now. Well, you know, Dennis Farina hosting back then, the 2000s episodes. And it ended in 2010 when he, they just canceled the show because he died in 2015. So.
Wait, what are you doing up at 6 o'clock in the morning? Watching TV?
Getting kids to school.
Wait, they still go to school?
Well, not anymore, but like during the school year, like when they actually could like attend class, we would, the TV would be on.
And you would have Dennis Farina talking about like unsolved mysteries. How old are your kids?
One is 5, the other is 18, but my husband watches it. So, and he actually, there's Pluto TV. They have an unsolved mysteries channel where that's all they play all day long. And he still watches it.
I mean, the show ran for like 20 years. I mean, all up, like between like 88 and 2002, I think was like the Robert Stack years. Although he didn't start it. He came in sort of like, because I remember like Raymond Burr was the original one with his like very stoic voice. I don't know if you guys remember that. He was the first one. But I obviously remember the Robert Stack years for the most part. So, but to have like an Unsolved Mysteries channel all day, all the time, like that's
depressing. It's depressing.
I was gonna say, that's a lot. That might be super. You got to get a Dateline in there, or like, you know, a Seinfeld or something, just to kind of
something to lighten the mood. Honestly,
a Friend or something, you know, just to kind of keep with the times. So Netflix rebooted the Unsolved Mysteries franchise this year, and they started it off with it's tagged as having 12 new episodes, but 6 were dropped on July 1st. And the promise is that there will be 6 additional episodes towards the end of the year. And Netflix is reported as saying that the COVID pandemic shutting down of all TV production has not stopped that I guess the episodes were ready to go. I guess they had planned to do it in 2 separate releases, but they're planning to release they don't have a release date as far as I can see for the remaining 6 episodes. And so it dropped on July 1st, and it's been in the top 10 with Netflix since it dropped, with it being number 1 on Netflix's queue on Thursday, July 3rd. And so the series was rebooted. IMDb gives us the tagline saying that it's fusing some of the signature elements from the original series with some contemporary character-driven storytelling. It is produced, executive producers on this are some veterans from the original Unsolved Mysteries crew, Terry Dunn Muirer, John Cosgrove. They both worked on the original Unsolved Mysteries back from the 80s into the 2000s. They're tagged as having been part of that for the entire run. And so one of the stark contrasts for me has been that there has been no host. What does that do for the two of you? Let's start with you, Sunny. What do you think?
Honestly, you know, when you were asked, hey, do you guys watch Unsolved Mysteries? Myself, not really, because I get scared really easily and I don't like to be sad. But when I, you know, watch this series, it didn't deter me. I was okay with it because I like being brought into the story, kind of building a relationship with the characters, trying to figure out what happened. So I don't think the host not being there steered me away. I was fine with it.
What about you, Brandy?
A host is helpful. Like, you know, they would actually tell you what the story was about before they got into the meat of it and the events. And with this one, they don't do that. So, like, the episodes are, you know, family members or friends or people involved talking, but you don't know what happened yet because they're taking their time. And midway through, you find out, oh, well, this is what happened, or, oh, this event took place. So I'm like, I'd like to know, like, I'm impatient. Tell me what I'm about to see before I actually, like, invest my time in watching it. And I think, you know, if you're one of those people who likes to be, like, you know, captivated by, oh, what happened, that's fine. But since I'm used to, you know, the host telling us, okay, this is what happened, and then here are the events, I'm like, just get to it.
I'm a bit of the same way. So at first I was excited that they didn't try to, like, replace Robert Stack, because he definitely became the face of it. And, you know, his very, you know, macabre voice and things like that. But I like the fact that the host did set it up for you. I'm on the impatient side, and I do like true crime. I'm a big true crime fan. And I think I've been a true crime fan literally all my life, because now when I look back at the things I used to watch, Unsolved Mysteries being one of them as a 10, 12 year old kid, you know, I like to be scared in a controlled way. Yes, I mean, you know, you always have to preface this by saying I'm not a psycho. I'm really not. I like to watch stories about people's, you know, pain and anguish. But I think it's the genre itself is appealing, because, like, you are scared, but it's controlled. It's a very controlled kind of a situation. And I feel like the host role is something that frames the story for you a little bit. There's one of them that if I had had a host, you know, tell me kind of ahead of time what the episode was about, I would have skipped it. And I'll say it's the UFO one.
I was going to say, is it the aliens? Is it the alien one? Mm-hmm.
I feel bad saying it, because, you know, it's an intriguing story, but it's not something that I like things that have facts and evidence and a logical timeline and things like that. I'm not one to believe in aliens. My love of Star Trek and Star Wars notwithstanding. So yeah, I feel like at first I was like, okay, this is good. I like the fact that they don't have a host. But by the end of the sixth episode, I was like, I would have appreciated a host, because also, I don't know, a host would have summarized some of it. Like you said, Brandy, that, you know, the host would have set us up, that we would have known. And then halfway through, like all of a sudden it's like, oh, she went missing because of the mom. Like what? You know, so I don't know. I feel like the host would have, I guess, maybe defined a personality for the show a little bit more. Some of the critique of the show has been that it's not discernible from anything out there. Like there was one critique that said that it's like a quasi HBO documentary. So it just doesn't have that, I don't know, personality for me. But I found the stories themselves pretty compelling. So this is the spoiler free half of this, so that this way we're not going to give away any spoilers. And then the second half of this, we will dive into some of the episodes and maybe some of the aftermath of what's happening with those episodes since the release last week. So let's see what else. Did either of you catch anything with the theme song? Did the theme song resonate with you in any way, and the opening credits?
It definitely reminded me of the original, and I was watching it and my husband came in and he's like, hey, this sounds like Unsolved Mysteries. And then I was like, yeah, that's what it is. And he's like, what? The guy, and he, you know, he's silly. He's like, oh, did they resurrect that guy? I was like, whatever, dude, just go away.
He's been dead for 20 years, but we're going to bring him back.
Yeah. The song is very reminiscent of it, but it's like, at the end when it's like, I don't know. It kind of actually, you know what it reminds me of? Resolve the Pod. You know, they watch the Unsolved Mysteries and then they go back and talk about it. It kind of reminded me of their intro as well. But it's a little updated mixture of the last version of it, I guess.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely the last couple of bars, the couple of measures of the theme song actually bring in the original theme. So it's creepy, it's piano synthy. And then did you see the figure at the end as it's as the credits are closing out? It's actually like a blurry image of Robert Stack. Did you see that?
Oh my God.
I did not notice that. Mm-mm.
Oh yeah. Reddit told me that. I was like, oh, look at that.
I didn't notice that at all, but I still have one more episode to watch, so maybe I'll catch it on the last one.
Yeah, so just as the credits are closing out, you see like this figure, and it's definitely, what now that's been pointed out to me, it's definitely Robert Stack. So I was like, I appreciate the throwback, so that grabs the I feel like the viewers from the 80s and the 90s when he took over. I think he took over in like 88 or 89. So I don't know. There really isn't much in the way of like characters and casting, because this is definitely, each episode is its own kind of standalone.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I felt like with the series, what it does do, like myself, I'm not into the scary. I don't like to be scared. I feel really bad when because I know all of these mysteries are unsolved as well, which is a little frustrating. But I think it brings out the online sleuth. You know what I'm saying? Remember like those people with Don't Fuck with Cats, how they found those people? I think it brings out those people, because when I was watching the French one, I was like, I'm going to find that guy. I'm going to find him. I'm going to keep my eyes peeled, you know? And I think that's what it brought out with people to want to become a sleuth and want to solve the mystery or have some tips or really want to be involved. I think all of the episodes kind of bring that person out, or that type of person would, you know, like the series.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's a fair representation of it, because, you know, why else air these, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
You
Except
do want
to make us sad.
Well, yeah.
That's
yeah, it is.
I don't get sad from these. Like I watch Snapped and you know, things like that. So I'm just like, wow, people are capable of crazy stuff. But I think what's interesting is they have all these, you know, these episodes, and then they have one episode that is completely different from all the rest. And I'm like, why did they choose to only do one? And again, there's 12 episodes, but we have the six, and they threw that one right in the middle. And you're like, okay, that, you know, it kind of takes you off of that trying to figure out what happened. And then it puts you in a mind frame of like, are these other people crazy or did this thing actually happen? And I'm like, it couldn't have been a mass hallucination that, you know, took place. So something happened, but I think it's interesting how they were just like, let's just break up all this, you know,
murder,
basically doom and gloom, and throw mm-hmm. in something whimsical.
Yeah. I mean, you know, nobody got like hurt physically, right, in that one. But the old series did dive into some more of the paranormal. There was, you know, right. unexplained ghost stories and hauntings and things like that, you know, and, you know, they dealt with like lost love. So like trying to reconnect lost lovers from, you know, decades past. Mm-hmm. I did go on a little bit of an Unsolved Mysteries dive on Amazon recently, the old series, just to kind of see like, you know, what was going on and, you know, yeah. rekindle that old flame. Because I don't have a Pluto TV all day Unsolved Mysteries channel. So I have to go seek it out.
Pluto TV is free on your streaming service.
Ah, that's a good plug. They should sponsor you for advertising.
They should.
I know, right? Hey, cut that check right now. Come on, Pluto.
That's right. you know, I have a question for the two of you. So in the true crime that you have watched and in the snapped genres and things like that, I have some rather pointed theories or feelings, let's say more opinions about like reenactments of scenarios and crimes and things like that. I hate them. I hate reenactments. I hate them with like every fiber of my being, which is why I tend to listen to more true crime podcasts, because I'm not getting the recreations. I just want the story. I feel like just give me the facts. Give me what it is. Let me, you know, draw my own conclusions. I don't need to see, like, I watched the Lorena, you know, documentary. I think it was on Netflix a couple months back, and I had to turn it off because I'm like, the story's good, but I just don't want the reenactment. I just don't want it. And I find it cheesy. I find it takes away from the story. That's just me. What about you?
I'm ambivalent. I mean, not ambivalent. I'm a little. I really don't care either way. I mean, I feel like reenactments aren't accurate, so why have them? But I guess, you know, for entertainment value, they throw them in there.
I like the reenactment. Sorry, I'm on the other side of the scale. No, it's okay. I honestly, because they are telling the story, and it's obviously someone's opinion at the end of the day. It's not factual unless it really happened. But I enjoy it because it's like I'm getting the story, and then you guys are telling me your interpretation or, you know, what you perceive as to what happened. So as I'm watching it, I'm like, oh my gosh, this did happen, which it didn't, but whatever. Maybe it did. Who knows? I like to see it. I enjoy the reenactment because it paints the full picture. I feel like when the director or whoever decided to reenact this scene, it's meaningful for a reason. And, you know, they're telling the story, or the other characters are telling the story, or like the eyewitnesses or whoever was there or were involved. They're telling their story. And with the reenactment, it's kind of putting the whole picture together. And I respect that because I like to visualize and I like to see. I like all of my senses stimulated, you know?
Oh, I can absolutely appreciate that. It's just when it gets cheesy that I just go a little, no. But I mean, there were some reenactments in here, right? So, and I think that they were well done. Like there was on Oxygen, I think it's like DNA of a Murder. I couldn't watch it because of the reenactment. So I was like, nope, done.
Like, give me a podcast. I'll listen to a podcast instead.
I love Paul Hold. I will listen to the Murder Squad, and he's on that. And, you know, just no reenactments. I wanted to ask you about the format. So the original Unsolved Mysteries had like, they had a good few segments into each episode, whereas this reboot is focusing on one story per episode. How did that work for you? How did that work for you, Sunny?
I appreciated it. So I didn't feel like it was rushed. The story was rushed. I felt like I was able to focus on a story and a character and a family or whatever and just get that story out. So it felt like it was more podcasty. So an hour of a story, and then I digest that, and then I go on to the next one. So being overwhelmed with a bunch of stories, I would have cried. I would have cried all night, but just one story for an hour, I could deal with that. That's good for me.
How about you, Brandy?
I think it's fine. I guess, like, you know, back in the 80s, 90s, it was easier to put those, you know, the true crime genre wasn't a thing yet. It was just like, okay, let's tell these stories. Let's tell as many stories as we can in this time frame, and then throw in one that, you know, might be a little more lighthearted, like, you know, the lost loves and all that, to, you know, basically so the audience doesn't go away completely freaking, you know, just broken at the end. But I think with this, because there's so much true crime out there, it's like, okay, we can do this. We can tell an entire story. And, you know, even though some of them are like gut-wrenching, it's okay because we're used to that now because we watch true crime shows.
Right. It's like, are we becoming desensitized? Is that
what? We are.
I think we are becoming a little desensitized.
We are. But it does bring out the internet sleuth in us all. Like, I honestly felt like with the French one, I was like, I'm going to find this motherfucker. I'm going to see him somewhere. Maybe I need to go to Argentina. I don't know. But if I see him, you're in trouble, sir.
Absolutely. So there was another show that was out. It started the end of May. It was on ABC. I don't know if either one of you kind of caught it. It's called The Genetic Detective.
No.
You know, not to kind of get off topic, but it is related to kind of this like true crime renaissance. And I feel like mainstream TV has kind of missed the boat on a lot of, and mainstream like network TV has missed the boat on a lot of the true crime stuff. You know, your Lifetimes and your Oxygens, like Oxygen here, I don't know if it's a nationwide platform. They've gone all true crime all day, every day. So I feel like some of the more cable networks have definitely latched onto the true crime. So ABC launched Genetic Detective in the end of May using genetic genealogy. So the technology that they used to catch the Golden State Killer in April of 2018, they uploaded the cold case DNA to, you know, the GEDmatch, you know, platform, and they got like a second cousin's hit, and that's how they were able to get him. The ethics of that notwithstanding, but I like where now that whole genre is going into like resurrecting cold cases. So I think that there's a nice, you know, symbiosis between this Unsolved Mysteries, you know, reboot and the Genetic Detective. You know, all of it's playing into like the appetite that's out there to digest this true crime, you know, genre. So if you haven't checked that one, that definitely was a love it for me. The Genetic Detective. It was quick. It was only 6 episodes on ABC. So it's already finished its first season run. But it was interesting. So I feel like there's a lot of potential out there now with technology catching up to these cold cases. So yes, the internet sleuth is definitely one of them. And now we have like, you know, DNA and genetic, you know, technology, and people who are now able to connect the actual like people to living people to the DNA that's part of these cold cases. So, you know, so there's just a lot out there. And I think the mainstream run of cases like this is definitely reaching a larger audience. And I think the appetite is there for people to become, you know, part of the solution. They want to be part of, you know, something that's going to deliver good to a family. I that's what I'm kind of thinking about this.
Yeah, that's super fair. I love it. And I like with technology, with the genealogy and all that, I love it. And it's kind of like time's up, psycho killers. It's time's up. Like, we're going to find you. We're going to find you. You have a cousin, you have a niece, you have a son, you have something. And if we got some DNA, we're going to put it in the system. And guess what? We got you. Oh, well, sorry for your luck.
And that's why I think I like the true crime. It's not so much like I'm fascinated with like people's pain. It's not that. That's why like you do have to preface it. Like, I'm not a psycho. I'm not. But it's just like you want to be part of the solution. You want to, you know, sort of help these people find a way forward. And unfortunately, it is entertainment in a way. And it's a hard line to walk because it's like, I'm not a psycho, but why do I like this?
No, you're right. You're right. You're right, 100%. It's enjoyable for a certain, there's just this little thing in your brain, and it's like, I have to hear this. I need to know what happened. And it's an interesting case, like if it was solved, if it was unsolved, and it is content, it is entertainment. And it's not that I'm a psycho, it's that I'm interested.
I take notes. And so one of the things that I've picked up in the last couple of years as a hobby has been genealogy. I'm Irish by my heritage, my ethnicity. So, you know, I've taken an interest in sleuthing back in my own family history. So, you know, piecing together some of the things that, you know, these shows use to try to, like, you know, connect family members. Like, you try to find a Michael Kelly who was a farmer in 1865. Like, I dare you, try to find the right one. You know, it's not easy. So when you start, like, looking at, you know, detective skills and things like that, it definitely does translate over into that kind of a hobby. So, you know, it's I'm using my powers for good, not evil.
Yeah, I like the fact that it actually can exonerate people who've been falsely convicted of things they didn't do. And, you know, one person saying a person did something isn't necessarily proof, but a lot of people who have been convicted and they, you know, are innocent of these crimes that they were committed, and they're, you know, being exonerated by DNA. So I've, you know, in the reverse, I think that's also a really good thing, because a lot of times, you know, these people have had their lives ruined and, you know, lives basically stolen from them because a judge or a police officer or a court was just, they wanted somebody to go to jail for this particular crime, and they didn't care that the person probably was innocent.
Like the Netflix documentary, When They See Us. Did you guys watch that?
I couldn't watch it. Yes, I need to watch it, but several, I couldn't.
It was very painful. I remember that as a New York child. I remember that story firsthand. It was very painful for me to try to actually watch that series, because it took me, I would say, like 5 attempts to watch it. Mm-hmm. You know, because it was very painful to watch. I mean, these kids had 25 years of their lives stolen.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, and it changes you. Yep. It changes you for sure. Like I've heard the story before the series came out. Yeah,
you know, so that I like the notion of the exoneration that can come out of things like this. So I did some research and found that USA Today reported that the original Unsolved Mysteries series helped solve over 260 cases between 1988 and 2002.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So, you know, they didn't go into, like, you know, all the specifics, but just that, you know, over 260 cases in some way, shape, or form had some resolution. So I like the fact that people are getting involved, were getting involved with the old show. And then now, even though the show's only been out today's, we're recording this on July 12th, it's been out for 12 days. And in four of the 6 episodes, they already have credible tips. And the FBI actually reopened an investigation into the Alonzo Brooks case, the No Ride Home episode.
Oh, yes. Good.
And they're offering, yes, and they're offering a $100,000 reward leading to an arrest.
Yeah.
So I think that in that short amount of time, the number of tips that they said were credible. I mean, I'm sure there's been 400, you know, non-credible tips that came in, but that get that level of interest in such a short amount of time. I mean, I know we said at the top of this that it's been in Netflix's top 10 since its release. So, so I think there's a lot of promise for this show.
That's awesome.
Right? Yeah. So I was excited to read that. Is there anything else that we need to note before we move on to our recommendation and then we go into spoilers? Because I can't wait to talk about some of these episodes with you guys.
I know, right? Let's dig into the tea. You guys know enough. Yeah. Let's do it.
All right. So we're good. So are we ready for our love it or leave it recommendation?
Yes.
Yes. All right. I'm going to randomly pick. I'm going to say, Brandy, can you give us your recommendation first? Is this a love it or leave it for you?
For me, I'll say love it. I was hesitant about it. At first, when I saw it pop up on my Netflix, you know, recommendations, I was like, really? And then I actually, you know, watched. And so I was like, okay, yeah, this is good. So yes, love it.
And how about you, Sunny?
So we already know how I feel about true crime. I'm going to go with love it also. And I'm not a creep, but I enjoyed the stories. I'm mad that I enjoyed the stories because I was really sad to a certain extent. But to have to live through these stories with these people and to find out what happened, it really gets you fired up inside to want to help and to solve. And obviously that's fired up some people in the world and things are happening. And if these stories aren't shared, things won't happen. So I'm going to say love it so we can get some closure, you know, for these people.
I think that's the greatest reason to love a show is that you want to get closure for a family. I think that's really great. So for me, I'm going to say this is a love it. I do like the throwbacks to the original series. And I mentioned it in the music credits, in the opening credits, like you do see the image of Robert Stack. I think these stories are compelling. I think the need to, Sunny, as you said, the need for these families to get some closure. And if they're not shared, if they're not aired, if they're not read about, if they're not watched and being talked about in platforms like this and others, then there's nowhere for the families to go to get any answers, to get anything further along in their own cases here. So I think the six stories that they picked, well, five of the six were, for me, very riveting. I never, ever liked a story that involves a child being harmed. I have one of my own, and you know that is very painful to watch. The episode with the French children was particularly devastating for me. But overall, I do have to say that these six episodes did fly by. I did watch them in two sittings, so it is very binge worthy. They're under an hour each, so it's very digestible. I did find that the host, you know, was missing. So it misses the personality for me, but it's not so much of a hang up that it's not worth watching. So right. I'm going to say love it for me. All right. So now we are going to move on to the spoiler version where we're going to dive into some of these episodes and give you some of our hot takes on what we thought about the episode. And yeah, so if you have not yet watched these episodes and you do not want to have your unsolved mystery experience burst, I would suggest that you go watch those episodes and then come back and listen to us for the remainder of this podcast. So we're going to dive into these episodes. Again, last chance, if you have not watched those episodes, go back and watch them and come back and listen to us. But for those of you that are still along for the ride, we are going to talk about some of these episodes. So do you guys have anyone in particular that you want to start with?
The UFO episode. No.
You know what? I do want to get that one out of the way. It was a complete waste of time for me. I'm sorry. Sorry for the people that got abducted by aliens. Sorry. You know, I actually, while I was watching the episode, I was Googling like to see if like that movie Fire in the Sky from like 1990,
oh,
whatever.
I hate that movie.
I hated that movie. I saw the movie.
Hate that movie.
Like, I was like, seriously, can we go? Like, I hate this.
Yeah.
I mean, I get why they did it. Like, it's like, you know, a throwback to the original that, you know, brought in all these UFO and paranormal stories. But for me, this one just did nothing for me. I felt bad for these kids.
So with the episode, you know, it opens up with the old lady saying, oh my gosh, I saw this thing and my son said he saw this thing. How come you didn't tell me about this thing? And so I'm like, okay, what's this thing? What is it going to be? So I think Brandy with the host, if they would have told me it was about aliens, I would have left. And so I'm watching it and we figure out that it happened in what, like
1969.
September 1st, 1969. And you find out that they all have a shared experience that everybody, not everybody, but like these two kids get, you know, abducted by aliens.
Not two.
And more than two?
More than two.
Well, we talked to two kids that were abducted.
We talked to three.
Okay, excuse me. I'm sorry.
I watched.
the bald guy with the dark hair.
She got took notes, damn it.
She did. She said she took notes. But, I mean, personally, we live in California. We're in the high desert. Up the street is Edwards Air Force Base. And there's always been rumors of aliens around here. So I'm very scared. I'm a scary person. And so if I would have had a host, I would not have watched it. But it was entertaining. It happened so long ago, so I guess it's not going to happen to me. So I guess I'm okay with it. I don't know.
And it was in Massachusetts, so you're clear.
Hopefully. I don't know.
Well, we there's a group of people around here called the UFO Hunters or something like that. And they drive around here looking for UFOs. So, yeah, there's a big thing. It's a thing over here.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine in the desert, and especially that you're so close to the Air Force Base, I mean, there's always military things that are happening. But now, like, the report is that naval aviators were flying in the air that night, and they saw something that they couldn't explain either. So, I don't know. I just don't, for me, UFOs don't do anything for me.
It freaks me out, and I don't want to be that chick, but, like, we cannot be the only thing in the universe that is surviving and exploring other planets and moons and stars and all kinds of stuff. So if we think we're the only people out there, or the only beings out there, we're dumb as dirt, if that's what we think. But just stay where you need to stay. Stay away from me. Stay away from here. And, you know, go explore other places. Just don't come this way.
Stay away from here.
We're good. But, you know, no.
Oh, you know, I agree with you wholeheartedly that there's no way that we're the only things alive out there. But I just don't, I think that they're watching this and they're like, yeah, episode 2020, season 2020 of Earth, stay
away. I've seen that meme. It's like, 2020, it's lit.
They are screwing shit up there left, right, and center.
Really? So they're just
Yeah, I have a feeling that they're just like, no, Earth, we're good. We're good. Keeping a distance.
Primitive species on Earth.
Yeah,
we're like the bad neighborhood when they're like driving through the universe. They're like, Earth, nope. Mm-mm,
yep, they're locking their car doors. You know, they're slipping down their feet.
Damn, like, humans! They mess up everything.
GPS, get us out of the ghetto. Get us out of the bad neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But there was one thing that was said in the episode that, you know, one of the children now of 62-year-old adult said, you know, if you keep looking up at the sky, you're bound to see something. I've been looking at the sky for most of my years on this earth, and I've never seen anything.
Stop it, Sheila. Stop it now.
I know tonight you'll get the little disclaimer by the time that we actually air this podcast. Sheila has been taken by aliens.
Oh my god. Okay. We're good. We're good. Let's move on.
Neighbor saw a beam of light and then she was gone.
She was gone.
Yeah. It's because she said naval pilots, not naval aviators.
Yeah, they came for you.
They disappeared you.
I warned you, aliens. I told you, lock the car doors, you know, tell the GPS you want, you know, the non-ghetto version. Go. all right. So that was the low point for me. I don't know. That was just
okay,
you know, for me. I don't know. Where do you guys want to go next? Which one was more captivating? Which was the most captivating for you?
Let's talk about Alonzo. Let's talk about Zoe. That one kind of broke my heart a little bit.
No Ride Home. I was shattered by this one.
It was brutal.
It was tough. So, who wants to start?
Well, I'll start.
Yeah.
So, when I was watching it, I was like, I don't understand. Like, I don't understand how any of his friends could have left this man at this party knowing that there were people here who didn't like him because of the color of his skin. Like, it just boggles my mind how they could be so irresponsible.
So can we talk for a second? Like, we're all women. We have a code, right?
Yes.
You never leave your girlfriends, right?
Wherever you come together, you leave together.
Mm-hmm. And you eyes on each other the whole time out and about, right? So yes. I would imagine for the bros that there would be a similar code, especially because, like, they're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, they're in Kansas. Yeah, they're in Kansas.
It's rural.
they're like 45 minutes from where they live in Garner, Kansas or something like that. And they go to some other little town. I can't think of the name. I want to call it Carlisle or something. Yeah, I don't know.
No, it's a weird name. And it's spelled weird too. And I was like, what
exactly?
It was like Clinton like or something.
Lucene, yeah, Kansas. And so the scene is, you know, he goes to a party, they hear about a party, and everybody just invites everybody to the party. They don't know whose house it is. They know a few people there. There's a lot of people there they don't know, and they all show up at this party together.
But you don't know. Okay. You, the only people you know at this party are each other. So why would you leave when I'm at a party where I know nobody and they don't like me? So you're going to leave me? It doesn't make sense.
And didn't he get like into it? Like there was,
he got into an altercation. Yeah. And the guy apparently, you know, threw out some racial language, and, you know, Zoe was like, you know, I guess after it was squashed, he didn't think anything of it again. But I'm just like, I've seen situations where, excuse the term, rednecks are just waiting for an opportunity to pounce on a person.
Hell yeah.
So
hell yeah.
It's like, what? How? Why?
Yeah. Like, it made no sense. It was bad situations made all around. So I think they rolled like maybe 12 deep, and then people just started gradually leaving the party. They were like, you know, this wasn't our crowd. It was very rural. It was very country. So people started leaving the party who Zoe had come with, and he rode with another friend. And apparently this other friend, they needed cigarettes, so like, go get cigarettes. Friend gets lost, calls back to the party. I guess Zoe and another guy are there, like, hey, make sure you take Zoe home. And he's like, okay. And apparently Zoe never makes it home, and they never connected. It was something. And then his mom, it's just terrible. It's just heartbreaking.
Oh my God, to watch his poor mother. She was just, she was just ripped apart by this. And he even, you know, it's been 16 years. I just felt so bad for her. And so for me, this was actually the first one that I took notes on that I was like, okay, I need to find out what's going on with this now that the show has been released.
Yeah.
And this is the one where the FBI, so we talked about in the last segment, the FBI has reopened the case. Since the show's aired, they've gotten enough credible tips to reopen the case. They're offering $100,000 reward for an arrest in this case. So they've gotten stuff to go on. Like, it's no longer a cold case.
Good.
Which this makes me really happy. You know, so, and again, happy, I have to, you know, preface that, you know.
Like, I know what you're saying. Yeah.
But
I'm picking up what you're putting down.
That it's getting, thank you. I appreciate that. Because, you know, it's so here. You know, so the fact that, you know, this is getting air, this is getting the light of day again, and, you know, I mean, and also light of day on someone's desk, like they're opening it up and they're seeing it. The fact that his face is out there again, it humanizes him. It's not just a case. This is someone's child. This is someone's brother. And his brother, who's also interviewed for the show, for the segment, he was just gut-wrenching to watch as well.
Yeah, because he's his big brother. Yeah, it was sad.
And I'm sorry, but the law enforcement in that town, I can't pronounce it. I think Brandon.
Lucene.
Yeah.
Lucene.
But it's spelled very weird.
It is.
They were saying that, like, this could be self-inflicted. And meanwhile, the U.S. state attorney who announced that the FBI was reopening the case is like, there's no way. There's no way that this was self-inflicted. So he disappeared from the party. So we'll just, you know, finish off the plot for it. He disappeared from the party, was not seen the next morning. And a month later, his body is found by a creek. 27 days later. And the only thing that was found after the party was his hat and his boots.
Mm-hmm. Which is weird.
Which is chilling. Like, that gives me goosebumps to even say out loud. Like, the only thing they found was his hat and his boots. Like, how do your boots come off?
Right?
They don't
come off.
They don't.
Like,
they don't.
You lose flip-flops, not boots.
Yes. Well, flip-flops plays into one of the other episodes, right? But yeah, so the fact that they're, you know, working on this case again, and it's been 16 years and they have leads, it just gives me hope.
I'm going to tell you right now, this is my theory. I think the police were involved. I think that someone at that party, they killed him. They hurt him real bad, something. they took him away. Dad, this happened. Uncle, this happened. Whatever. They helped hide that body. They helped. And then when their investigation was over, because they say that they went and searched for him. They had the FBI out there, the KBI out there. They did dives and this and that, and they couldn't find him. And then on the 27th day, they allow the family to go and search for him, and then his body's there. No, there's involvement. Collusion. Right.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. And he was kept on ice. There's no way, because he wasn't in a state of decomposition.
Mm-hmm. At all.
That would, you know, sort of jive with the 27 days out in the exposed. Like, I mean, 27 days out exposed, you would be, you know, animals would find you.
Exactly.
There would be a measure of decomposition that, you know, you wouldn't be able to just view him and be like, oh, yeah, that's him.
Yeah. They said he was possibly in the water and got washed up. And they're like, his stuff wasn't ruined. Like, his papers, paper was fine.
Yeah, they said his papers were fine. Like, you know, in his wallet. Ooh.
After a couple of days in water, you're gonna swell up. You get bloated, and it's not a pretty sight. So
things start to come off.
Well, probably. I hope they find it that you know, they've opened up this case, which is amazing. And what has it been? What, 10 days? You said 11 days since it aired. That's making moves happen, and that just says to the world and whoever's listening is that you put it out there, and you know you keep sharing your message, you keep telling your story, you know, you keep that hope alive, and then something will hopefully eventually come from it, you know.
100%. Was it Sunny, did you say that you didn't watch all 6 episodes?
I missed the last episode. I watched the 5 and then I missed the 6th episode.
That was a good one. Actually, go back and watch that one. It's hard to watch, but it's good.
Okay. I will.
Dude. Right. Ugh. I want to talk about that one.
Go ahead and talk about it. It's okay. My feelings won't be hurt.
Oh my God.
I want to know. Tell me.
All right. So Brandy, you and I, we'll talk about it. So you go for it.
Okay. So, okay. A woman has 6 children that she freaking basically manipulates. Like, well, she manipulates the second one the most, but manipulates into doing her dirty work. How do you do this? Like, wait, I don't understand.
I gotta stop you. She doesn't have 6 children. She has 6 daughters.
6 daughters. Yes.
The amount of estrogen flowing through that house is too much for me. Like, I have 1 brother. I have 1 son. That's it. I'm good. I'm good with testosterone.
Spicy.
I am not good with all that estrogen.
Right. That's a lot.
But yeah, so go for it. Yeah, this mom was just psycho.
What was her name? Susan? Sandy. Sandy. Yeah, because her daughter, what's her name? I was going to say Candy. The 3rd daughter called her by name. She didn't call her mom.
Right.
She called her Sandy. And I thought that was very telling, because if your child won't even call you mom, you obviously are a bad mom.
Right. There's something afoot there that just doesn't smell good.
Yeah. And so, like, obviously, like, the 1st daughter, Brandy, I think that's really funny. Her name was Brandy.
Yeah.
She obviously, you know, they obviously, all of them have a low opinion of her, especially given what she did. But I don't understand, like, this woman, she, you know, basically hopped from man to man, cheats on her husband with his brother, and then marries his brother. And it's just the whole thing. I was just like, wow, so why is she still walking around?
I'm so sorry. It's so rednecky. I can't.
It's just gross.
It's disgusting. It's like, so their stepdads were brothers. Like,
yes.
You're getting a little too close on the family tree lines here for me to be comfortable.
Your brother is your cousin, your cousin brother.
She married a husband. His name is.
Here it is. So stepdad is also uncle.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Because she married brother one, Albert, first, and then that becomes stepdad, and then Gary is uncle. Right. So, right. And then Gary becomes husband number 2. So now he's stepdad, former uncle, and now stepdad number 1 is uncle. Do we follow? Right. I feel like that was a lot.
They switched roles. Yeah, basically they switched roles.
But it's a little too incesty for me. Like you're blurring the lines.
Yeah, she was definitely a piece of work, or is definitely a piece of work because she's still alive. But how? Okay, so I get that she likes to cheat on her husbands because she married the third guy or the whatever number he was after she kills her husband, and now they're divorced and now she's remarried. So she's like one of those people that it has a hole inside of her that cannot be filled, cannot be satisfied. And
she's a man eater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she, you know, basically she kills her husband, and her and the man she would marry next dispose of his body along with daughter number two,
Lena.
Lena, who is now missing. And how I just don't understand how the authorities aren't looking in her direction. Like, I would have been that cop that stalked the shit out of her just so that I could arrest her because I knew she did some shit.
Like every 3 days, I'd be like, hello, Sandy, I'm here. So this was the episode for me that I was like, if this show had a host, I would know going into it that daughter number two goes missing. Like, I felt like it took 30 minutes for us to find out that she went missing, you know, definitively. Like, it was danced around. They talked about it, but it took a long time to get to the point where she was actually missing, which is fine. But it was like, that was when I was like, oh, this is when I needed a host. And also for UFO episode, I would be like, yeah, skip. But for this one, this one had a civil case that they got served, right? And that's when she went missing. It wasn't a criminal case, right?
Right. It was the daughters, Gary's daughters sued her for wrongful death.
Right. And then they got convicted. So Sandy and husband number three, we believe. Well, husband number three that we've been told about, the newest one, Chris, who was complicit in the murder with Gary. Mm-hmm. So they have to pay $7 million each to Gary's daughters?
I think total.
Total. Okay. I wasn't sure. But obviously nothing's been paid. So there was why would they pay? They don't believe that. And there's no criminal component to compel them to do anything. So right. I have a question about, there was one part where the third daughter, is her name Candy? The third daughter who doesn't call her by her name.
I think her name is Candy.
That's tragic. Candy and Sandy. I just can't stand rhyming names.
and Brandy.
Oh, Brandy rhymes too. Oh man. But I like the name Brandy, so you're good. But Candy is talking about this dog, right? That the mom said was buried at this new property. So there's three places that the story kind of, you know, sprinkles itself around. So there's Salem, there's Sligo, and there's two farms there. So apparently the dog died in Salem, but Sandy, the mom, is saying that the dog is buried at the Sligo property, the new property.
Right.
And that was weird. And she said that the dog was buried in this like clump of trees. And they think this might be a clue or something. It may be that it's.
Yeah. She told Candy that she had buried the dog on the Salem property first. And then she went back and said that the dog was buried in the new location.
That's
and
what Brandon, it was.
Candy was like, what? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Like, why would you dig up a dog?
Yes.
Right. So the timeline doesn't match.
Mm-mm.
For that.
So do we think that she buried Lena there?
They did like a ground laser, a ground radar thing, searching on the new property for her, and they found nothing. But Brandy went back to the first property, that was Gary's house. She said there was a well there that had been filled in. So it's possible that she buried her there, or she might not have buried her at all. She might have given her the same treatment that she gave Gary and scattered her ashes all over the place and bones so that nobody could find her.
Right. That's what I'm thinking. I don't think that it's possible that there's any trace of this poor girl left.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, this mom, Sandy, has, you know, honed her craft enough that there's going to be no trace of this girl, unfortunately. But
and she disappeared her because she helped in a murder?
She went to Albert and told Albert what happened, the whole story about how Gary was killed.
Albert is stepdad number one, now right. uncle. So he's been replaced as stepdad by Gary, now dead. So now Albert is stepdad via uncle.
Okay. And Albert recorded the conversation, and they went to the police about it, and Sandy got a lawyer, and they made Lena recant her story, so they couldn't take it to court. And when they did the civil suit, they wouldn't even let them play the tape. So it's just, the whole thing was a shit show.
Yeah, there's been no justice for anybody in this. Now the mom is raising. So Lena had a son, and he's very small when she disappears. So now the mom is raising the son as her own, and none of the other daughters. So basically, there's some sort of split in the family. So the three younger daughters, we don't see anything about them. We see Brandy, who's the oldest, and Candy, who's the one who doesn't want to refer to her mother as mom. They're the ones that are interviewed for this segment. So the three younger daughters, so one of the younger daughters is paid to take down the missing persons flyers that they've put up.
Yeah.
What?
Yes.
He pays them $5 each to take down missing persons flyers.
Where does this all happen? Where is this going on at?
Missouri.
Yeah, she's a garbage person.
Yeah, so it's pretty disgusting.
Right. And I think it's hilarious. Like the police officer is the only one that alluded to the fact that she wanted a boy and she never gave birth to one. So her opportunity to basically have a son and raise him as her own now presents itself when her daughter disappears. So there's also, you know, she's got a double motive to basically get rid of her child, which is just ridiculous. I don't understand how a mother could do this to her children.
Yeah, there's bad moms out there.
Yeah, but this goes beyond being a bad mom. This is just, ugh,
horrible.
This one's despicable, really.
Like, honestly, she does not deserve to be walking around free at all.
No. Now, I mean, there's enough to say that so based on her daughter Lena's confession, the daughter who disappeared, confessing that they, you know, took care of Gary out in the woods kind of thing, burned him, scattered his ashes all around. And now the daughter who was complicit in the murder goes missing. Come on. There's no doubt. There's no doubt. But this was a really compelling story. And this is another one of those cases that they've had several credible tips come in. So maybe there's something on the properties that, you know, were mentioned, maybe the thing with the dog, cause that is weird. You know, the ground radar didn't really show up anything, but there was some structural changes that Brandy, when she went to revisit the property, she said that, you know, there was like a mud room here and stuff like that. So now there's like cement that's been filled in.
Yeah.
So there's been some structural changes to the property, to the buildings on the property. So maybe there's more to be had there, but I'm hoping that, you know, some of these get some real resolution. So that's the other thing. So I'm hopeful that with the six episodes that are coming out, that they'll be able to like narrate in some of these updates for us.
Hopefully.
So, okay. So we're kind of at the 1 hour mark. Maybe what we'll do is I'll give each of you just a few minutes just to kind of give us a quick summary of, you know, your feelings on this, you know, to reiterate the love it aspect. Now we can include some of the spoilers too, if you want. So.
Brandy, you go first. Oh, gosh. I honestly, like, the last two episodes are the ones that, like, really, really, like, resonated with me. And I'm really hopeful, especially in the Alonzo, Alonzo Jones.
Alonzo Brooks.
Alonzo Brooks. In his case, I really hope that an arrest is made and a conviction is made, or arrests and convictions, because what happened to him is just, it's awful. And it basically, it's a hate crime. And
these people who did this to him should, they should be held accountable. For in Sandy's case, honestly, the law enforcement needs to do way more than they're doing, because they know what she did. There's a taped confession. There's just, it's like, for some reason, the ball got dropped somewhere and nobody's decided to pick it up except for, you know, unsolved mysteries. So I feel like, you know, with her and she, the fact that she's raising her grandson as her son, it just bothers the hell out of me. And her, you know, his aunts can't even see him. So overall, I really hope, you know, some justice is had by all the families on all the episodes. I enjoyed watching, and again, it's a love it for me.
Well, like I said, you know, I loved it. I'll give it a love it also, just because I want justice to be served. So we didn't talk about it, but I'll just kind of give y'all a quick rundown of the French one that everybody kind of glazed over because it was in French and you have to read subtitles. But I read the subtitles, and this guy was a family annihilator. I can't stand it. And he was just such an asshole. And I think he's on the run. I'm going to stalk him. We're going to find him. And I hope that his case opens up or people actually spot him and see, you know, what he's been up to. Because it seems like what he did, like he killed his family because he was poor, or that his business was unsuccessful, and that his lineage is from counts and dukes and shit in France. And that's bull. And he was just a selfish person. He had a beautiful family and he ruined them. And I'm just disappointed in that one for real. But there's so many good ones to watch. Like, I would just watch them all. Like, there's more I want to talk about, but we're at the hour mark. So watch it. It's good.
I agree. I liked the House of Terror one that you talked about, the French component. The fact that they made an international story so prevalent in the series, you know, I feel like that's intentional. This is not just an American-made phenomenon. This is not just an American-made show, that there are crimes out there that are international, and we do need a much broader audience. And I feel like that's the reach of Netflix as well. The fact that that story started off and he was a count, there's like, you know, French aristocracy and nobility, already had an air of mystery. And then the turn that it took, and there's no doubt 100% that man, he killed his whole family. Mm-hmm. And I might have to learn French with you, and we'll track that son of a bitch down. I thought it was interesting in that episode that the French detective that they interviewed, he says he looks like everybody. Like, he has a distinguishing feature. And I was just like, oh, that was just the knife in the heart. That it's just like, somebody somewhere knows something. Like, you guys kind of, I wish they had done like an age comparison, like what they project he would look like now, because
that's a good idea. But he has a snaggle tooth and a big old schnozola. We'll find him. I'm sorry. We're exactly going to get him.
And, you know, there were other episodes. There was a hairstylist who went missing.
Her son. Yeah.
Like, her son was locked out of the house the day after her body was found. Her body was missing for 2 years, and then her remains were found. But he was locked out of the house, like, almost immediately. I'd had to go like live with other family members. So one of the criticisms that Netflix had was that they were criticized for editing the husband, Rob, his interview in such a way that like it could potentially frame him. But Netflix stands by their editing, saying that they feel like it was an accurate portrayal, that they just edited for content and length.
He's a creep. That guy was a fucking creep. You lock your stepson out the second she goes missing. You know something, motherfucker. You set it up.
I don't need editing to tell me that the guy is a slime bag. Mm-hmm. So we didn't get to dive into all of the episodes, but I think the Alonzo Brooks one was just so gut-wrenching. And 100% in my mind, it's a hate crime. And a hate crime, it doesn't matter what era, what decade, what year we're in, a hate crime is the most heinous act that you can do. To hate another person's skin, and, you know, this being very topical for now, to inflict any kind of pain or, you know, worse on somebody for how they look or how their sexual orientation or their religious orientation or anything is, I think is one of the most abominable things as humans that we can do to one another. So I appreciate the fact that Netflix is bringing some of these cases to light. I appreciate that the audiences are watching and they're, you know, rummaging back in their memory banks and they're saying, hey, I might know something. I might have seen something on the road at that intersection where this young man, Alonzo Brooks, went missing. Like, I saw those hat, that hat and boots. Maybe I saw a car, maybe I saw like a make of a car. So the fact that they're calling in, they're reporting that the FBI reopened that case, that one for me was really the standout in this 6-episode launch. The UFO, unfortunately, was the low point for me. But I'm just hoping that these families get some sort of closure. I want them to get closure. I want the accountability to be there for the people who did this. And, you know, we said it earlier, like, time's up for a lot of these people who think that they've gotten away with it because time and distance and place have, you know, have come to pass. But, you know, law enforcement has a long memory. You know, some law enforcement agents, I know that from different shows and things like that, they're like, I'm still working because I don't want to let this one go. Like, yeah. I could have retired, but I'm still working this one because if I go, then the institutional knowledge of this goes. So I appreciate what Netflix is doing here with this show is that you're transferring a lot of that institutional knowledge because we are getting on in years from the time that a lot of these cases happened. So the fact that these details are being resurrected and, you know, we're putting these people's pictures out there and people are remembering things that they might have seen, they might not have connected the dots. I'm hoping that there's, in the follow-up episodes that come out, that we're going to see some resolution, especially for the Alonzo Brooks one. That one for me is like numero uno. I want to see something on that one.
Yeah, sad.
So, yeah, so this has been a love it for the three of us. I want to thank the two of you so wholeheartedly for coming on here and talking to me about this. So we have Brandy and Sunny from the Book of Lies podcast. Wanted to give us a little shout out to say goodbye.
Oh yeah, sure. So thank you for having us. And like she said, we are Sunny and Brandy from Book of- Brandy, do you want to say your name?
This is Brandy.
And this is Sunny from Book of Lies podcast. Yeah, we drop a new episode every Tuesday. We talk about fraud and scams. It's the kind of lighter heart.
And as a fan of the Book of Lies podcast, I can wholeheartedly endorse that. It's a fantastic podcast.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah. And this is Sheila from Pod Clubhouse, and we will see you again soon. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.